Welcome to the 32nd episode of the Reckless Dice Podcast, where we discuss Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay 3rd Edition. Joining us tonight, Layla Fridge Gargoyle Miranova.
Hello.
Jordan Bloody Sunboy Steelman.
Ew.
And also a special guest, Philip Sirodin Boujon.
Hello.
And I am Jesse Gitzman Burke. Did I pronounce that correctly?
It's Kaodrin.
Kaodrin. All right, let's kick it off with some news. Not a lot of news has happened over the last 2 weeks. We haven't heard any new information on product updates or new print-on-demand supplements. Really, the only news that I'm aware of is we went to KublaCon.
We did. We were there.
We were there.
I can confirm this.
We got very little gaming in.
We did. Well, we didn't get into any of the things we signed up for, but we did play some mean Munchkin rounds.
We did. We played a card game.
We beat out a group of little kids and felt really awesome about ourselves afterwards.
We only felt...
In other words, you were playing real Munchkin.
we were playing for prizes, so we went full bore. And we only feel good about this because these two or three people we were playing with were, for lack of a better word, the horrible kind of gamers.
Well, we also teamed up at the end and kind of, I don't know, underhandedly beat all of them. So I think they weren't very pleased with us, but that's just how we do.
You know, we did a good job, I thought. Yeah. I was pleased with our master manipulation abilities. We convinced we had a very complex plan to win this. Like, we could have won a debate or a run for president or something with this plan we had.
Mm-hmm.
But otherwise, we didn't get into any role-playing games. I was really hoping to get into the game of Cthulhu so we could explore that, or even 7C. But unfortunately, we did not get picked for any of the pools to play in this game. So we ended up just kind of hanging out and absorbing gaming culture for a weekend.
Yeah.
It was good. It was a nice hotel. We had an Eggs Benedict made for a king, though.
Yeah. No, the eggs were delicious.
So let's just skip the rest of the news unless you guys have anything really exciting that's happened over the last 2 weeks you'd like to talk about.
Not particularly. It's been quite a while since I've managed to get down in front of the game table, just because real life has continually proven to be an obstacle. So.
Well, Philip, have you gotten any good gaming in over the last 2 weeks?
Yeah, I'm lucky. Yeah, I get to play every 2 weeks online, though, with my GM. So mm-hmm. We are doing the original Enemy Within campaign. And we just had a huge encounter against some beastmen. So that was cool.
Oh, excellent. So I have not played that campaign, though I'm... How far into it are you?
We are kind of going... Not really in a linear fashion at all. We are doing a death over the Reich, mm-hmm. but we are not following what okay. we should be following. We are just having fun going here and there and jumping.
Oh, excellent. So yeah. What kind of character are you playing in that game?
I am playing Gaston d'Armagnac, who is a Bretonian... It's a second career, so it's a Bretonian now a duelist, and he's having a lot of he's a kind of very arrogant, you know. He's a Bretonian noble, and he kind of looked down upon all what he sees in the Empire.
Mm-hmm. That could be a fun character to play, where you just think everybody's beneath you.
Basically, yeah, I'm having a lot of fun.
And he's a dirty Bretonian too, so of course he's going to have not so great views of the Imperials.
Exactly, but and the other people, none of them are nobles. So we have a boatman, we have kind of a bounty hunter and a scout. So it can get very dicey sometimes.
Well, that's interesting. I haven't played any games where any of the characters have been a noble themselves. There's only been, you know, interaction with nobles, which generally doesn't go so good.
No. In fact, the impression I'm getting is that the nobles are set up to be hated.
Well, that's kind of, actually, I think that's part of the background of kind of the present day of Warhammer, I guess, is, you know, they kind of, I don't know that they really go into it very explicitly, but there's a lot of little kind of hints and nudges that, you know, they're starting to enter the very, very early sort of Renaissance period where, because what I guess the printing press was recently invented, mm-hmm. so now the peasantry is trying to or people are trying to push the peasantry to become literate so that they can take control of the of their own destinies from all of the nobles.
Yeah, there's that transition of power where the lower classes are becoming a little bit more empowered on a daily basis. The merchants are becoming the new middle class.
Yeah.
And the power is slowly being taken away from the 1%. Well, actually talking about your character, Philip, is kind of one of the core pieces of what this episode is going to be about. There's two main focuses for this episode. The first one is we're going to give Philip an opportunity to tell us all about the online community and the online gaming that he was just referring to and let everybody know how to get involved and really how it works and if it's for you. And really just kind of explore what that offers. So the second segment that we're going to do tonight is a deep dive into a segment we're calling Who Are You? Which is kind of meant to be who are you compared to who you play? So, you know, how much of yourself do you project into your characters, which is your own personal personality, or do you kind of play polar opposites and things like that? So, after we talk about the online community, we're going to hop into that. So, Philip, tell us a little bit about this online community, how it started, and what you guys are doing there.
Okay. It started about a month and a half ago. I was very desperate to play Warhammer 3rd edition because where I live, I'm not finding anyone. So I started a Google group called the Warcraft 3 Virtual RPG. And I made all the information to play online available either through a map tool or Fantasy Grounds 2.
Mm-hmm.
We now have 46 members that are interested.
Was that 46?
46, yeah.
Wow.
Today, I think.
Excellent.
And we are running demo games, every couple of weeks, at least once a month. So anyone that is, interested to come and play online can come and get the information, ask any questions, and join a demo game.
And are people able to... What are you using to actually play the games? Fantasy Grounds or Map Tools over Skype? Or do you use something else?
No, that's exactly what we do. I mean, when the Google group is simply to gather people together. And I put the information to use Map Tool, which is basically linking to your website. I put a lot of information on Fantasy Grounds too, because that's what I'm very familiar with. I'm also sharing my personal files that expand what Neil created.
Mm-hmm.
Any software, and we use a Skype to connect as well.
So if somebody wanted to listen in on a game and kind of be a fly on the wall, is that something they can do?
On a demo game, definitely. We are running demo games. They can come. They can create. They can choose one of the characters. If they don't want to play, that's okay. They can just listen and see how it goes. But then when we run a normal game, we prefer people to be participating.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so you're able to get enough people together to get a regular game going. I mean, I've seen the advertising on the Fantasy Ground or Fantasy Flight Warhammer forums pretty regularly, where you guys are talking and recruiting for players, and it seems like it's really starting to gain some traction.
Yeah, little by little. Now that we have a good number of members, we need GMs more than we need players, but we need GMs. So that's the one thing. The second thing that we kind of launched, and we did that this week, it's called the Old World League. And it's a concept that known as a Pandorstat on the boards.
Mm-hmm.
It's a concept, basically, it's an organization that is headed by a very wealthy benefactor. And this organization is recruiting adventurers on missions to all the corners of the Warhammer world. So you can be sent to, you know, explore the buried tomb of the Lich Lords, or mm-hmm. you can be sent to discover the hidden temple in Astria, or just, you know, stay in the Empire. But basically, the concept of the Hold a World League is that it's an open invitation, loosely connected campaign with multiple GM. And players can create one or more characters, and they can jump from one adventure to another.
Oh, so it's kind of an excuse also to go and explore the more exotic locations that you rarely get to play in.
Exactly. That was
so I can finally do my adventure to Lustria and see the lizard men.
Exactly. That's the excuse. You know, we don't worry too much about how they get there. It's more, you know, why are they there, and then they can play one adventure, and then they can jump to another adventure with another GM and be, say, in a Kislev or in a Bretonnia, anywhere in the world.
I like the idea of the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen or something, you know.
Basically. Yep.
But in Warhammer.
Exactly.
Here's your mission. If you choose to accept it, go and do this insane mission somewhere on the other side of the world and come back tomorrow.
That is cool, yeah.
And
you take a little bit of the realism out of it and make it more just kind of like an adventure TV show and
exactly.
go and like play something fun.
So for Warhammer, would it be the League of Slightly Less Incompetent Heroes or Gentlemen?
That sounds like a fun idea.
Yeah, and we just launched that this week. Dan is having a game this Saturday using a map tool, and I'm having a game next Saturday using Fantasy Grounds. And there is also another GM, Captain Cutlass, that is creating a campaign, a mini campaign, like 4 or 5 a session.
Now, the online community, are they looking for players who are going to show up like every week for like a long-term campaign game, or are the people who can, or is it open to people who want to get in on some one-off games where they can really just, who have a harder time facilitating regular occurring gaming groups? Can it work for both, or is it kind of one or the other?
It worked for both. I mean, the Hold a World League is more a one of one session or 2-3 session kind of adventure, and then you can join another GM. On the Google group, you can ask for longer campaign. I know that there are some people that have gotten to the group and are using the file and information we made available, but they are playing with some friends and they are running a full long campaign. So it really depends. You know, everyone is welcome to come. Everyone is welcome to try to launch a game for 1 or 2 sessions,
mm-hmm.
or recruit for longer.
Well, the one reason I bring that up is I always felt when doing the online games, getting a game here and a game there wasn't the hard part. That was actually pretty easy. The
right.
hard part from when you're playing remotely is getting a group who can commit to getting together on a regular basis. That's much easier in person.
Yeah.
Remotely, that's especially when you add in things like time zone differences, it becomes really quite a challenge.
It's a commitment. I mean, I see my group. I'm not GM in this group, but I'm playing, and we are meeting every 2 weeks. One of our players is in Australia, one in Canada, and 3 of us are in the US. But it is a commitment. You know, once you discuss and you decide with a GM. And you know, if you're enjoying it, you want to come back, and we are enjoying
mm-hmm.
very much, so we are going back.
You know, it's funny you should the way you kind of describe that. It's very similar to the reason why our Gathering Storm live session ended so abruptly without the finale episode, was because we were playing that one remotely with groups from all over the U.S. when we were first getting started and trying to scrounge together players. Unfortunately, that group fell apart near the end, and we never made the finale episode. It just kind of ended with Lester about to die and
everybody, kind of at the climax of the adventure, and just got left to drop. Yeah, maybe one day we'll try and find a way to revisit it and just give it its closure. But that's something certainly to be aware of and look out for when doing online games, is be cognizant of everybody who's going to be playing's availability, and really look to get players who can have that commitment.
Right, exactly.
Jordan, have you had any experience playing online games?
I have. I've played online through, you know, a few various ways. I've had one or two experiences, not through Skype. This actually predates Skype, but through some other kind of chat program that I was using back in the early 2000s. And then, you know, I've done some, like, play by email or play by post or that sort of thing. Play
Ooh,
by
tell, IBM. Tell me a little bit about those. I'd considered it at one point and almost tried to get into one, and it didn't really follow through with it, but
Did you say play by post?
Yeah, can you explain what,
like,
those
via
are?
Via mail? Like via snail mail?
Yeah, no, not quite.
How in the world would that play out?
I could only imagine how much of an adventure that would be.
That's like playing chess over the mail, you know, like, each time you get a move.
That would be absurd. How would you roll dice?
Yeah. So there's kind of like, you know, maybe to break this down for some folks who aren't really totally familiar with all these different terms, a lot of the ways that you can, you know, engage in a role-playing game that aren't live, you know, there's play-by-post. What play-by-post usually refers to is, like, you have a forum somewhere, you know, some website, and... one of my examples, I used to frequent a website called penandpapergames.com, and they have forums, you know, where you can just generally chat about, you know, role-playing games, and you can look for other players and stuff like that. But they also had a dedicated forum, which was all about, you know, quote-unquote play-by-post games. So you could send out, you know, hey, I'm going to run this game, and so you kind of recruit some players. And the way that works is just, you know, the GM might start it off, and he posts, you know, a message on the forum. He starts a thread, and he posts his first message, and the first message is kind of like, you know, his GM narration, right? He's setting the scene or whatever. And then, you know, usually, sometimes you can kind of do it freeform, but oftentimes you might want to have, like, a player order. So, you know, player A then posts his response about, you know, what his character does and what he wants his character to do. Player B does the same thing. Player C does the same thing. And then the GM, you know, at the end of it posts a response. Okay, well, here's what your character wanted to do. So here's what happens as a result of that. Here's what your character wanted to do. And then, you know, and a lot of those forums actually do have, like, electronic dice rollers that you can use, so you can roll your dice out there for everybody to see. But sometimes, you know, groups that will, you know, either just entrust the players to roll their dice and trust that they're being honest about it, or the GM will roll all the dice, or, you know, whatever it is. But that's basically a play-by-post, is so you're just using a web forum somewhere, and so it's not, like, live connection. It's just kind of, you know, hey, I post a message, and then somebody responds to it, and then somebody responds to that. Somebody responds. I ran a on that pen and paper site. I ran a play by post campaign, and just like any sort of web gaming, scheduling and kind of player commitment usually is what shoots those down pretty quickly. Mine was, I would say, in the relative scheme of things, probably fairly successful, because I think we managed to keep the game going for a couple of months, maybe 2 months or 3 months or something like that, before it sort of fizzled out. You know, players.
Did you guys get about one or two turns in during that?
Well, and this was a different RPG. This wasn't Warhammer, but we actually resolved an entire scene, like an entire, for lack of a better term, combat encounter. But basically, you know, it was kind of the intro to the campaign, which started, I always like to start my campaigns in medias res, so, like, in the middle of the action.
Okay.
So there was this big kind of battle between these two groups, and so we played out that entire battle, which probably would have represented, you know, maybe a good four hour game session, you know, a live game session. But, you know, it took us about 2 months to do 4 hours of live game.
As you've been talking about this, I'm recalling a little more accurately that I actually did begin to play one when I was desperate for getting some game on. And this was probably about 2 years ago, and I didn't get very far because the frustration level and the different style of play was really hard to kind of come to terms with. The speed that it happens is a little rough because you post and then you kind of like check in again later on the day or the following day, and like you said, you got the intro scene done over the course of about 2 months. It's a very slow paced and very, yeah. I guess, either casual. It's so casual but so hardcore at the same time, because the dedication and commitment to what you're doing is huge, but it happens over such a slow period of time.
Yeah, and that's usually why people drop off. You know, that's why interest tends to drop off for play-by-post and play-by-email games. A play-by-email game is played the same way, but it's just, you know, the GM emails all the players, and then the players, you know, a player responds and emails everybody else. You get the same kind of effect, and that's why interest tends to wane, is because, you know, it's, hey, it's been 2 months, and, you know, I've gotten to, we've done 3 rounds of combat, you know. But honestly, and I'm not going to go too far off into it, but, you know, you just have to understand that, and usually when you're playing play-by-post or play-by-email games, you structure them a bit differently. You're not going to try and do, you know, like a round-by-round, you know, dungeon crawl and play by post or play by email, just because it would take you years. It would take you years to get through, you know, a simple dungeon. And yeah. If you played every blow and you made, you know, every, and you rolled all these random encounters and every monster, you know, always attacked the party, you know, all that kind of stuff.
Has anybody else played any other types of remote gaming? You know, Philip, have you tried anything else?
Well, I mean, role-playing, no. I mean, I did Matula, Fantasy Ground. I did look into play-by-post, and I found actually there is a British group currently doing The Enemy Within play-by-post, but I think role-playing games, you know, you want the interaction. Even at least if it's through Skype, you still have some interaction. Play-by-post is a little too... Mm-hmm. Too remote for me.
Yeah, yeah. Play by post is really kind of more. It's almost more like a collaborative writing.
That is very true. Very true. That's how I found it to be too. And apparently I was too collaborative in the one I did, where I tried to make things happen, and they yelled at me and told me that I was making too much stuff happen too quickly, and I had to leave. They didn't tell me I had to leave, but I interpreted it as I'm not going to have fun.
Right. Yeah.
Well, let's hop into the character stuff. I'm really interested to hear your guys' thoughts on this, and I know that we got a lot of good feedback over the week from the community on what, you know, what they're up to and what they put into their characters. So what I'm going to do is kind of frame the concept of this conversation, and then I'd really like you guys to you know, let me know. We'll do a quick roundtable on how you guys personally approach it, and then let's kind of break it down with you know, how each thing works. I want to approach this from the perspective of a player character, not so much from as a GM. When creating a character, how much of yourself do you project into your character? So, you know, be that career types, aspirations, how you handle the world. What kind of backstory you create? Are you a male or female? You know, is it your comedy style and how you talk? Any of that kind of stuff. How much of that is you? Is it something you do to try and create a character that you admire? Is it one that you try and find a really eccentric version of yourself? Do you go at odds with yourself? Or do you just allow the game to naturally create something? It can get pretty deep and interesting. I'd love to, you know, maybe let's start it off with Philip. Let us know. Maybe let's talk about your Bretonian character. I think that'd be a great example because you don't hear about too many of them. So I'm curious.
Well, I mean, clearly the Bretonian character is, I put a lot of myself into it. I mean, I did a Bretonian because I'm playing in the US, and having the French accent definitely make a good Bretonian character.
Mm-hmm.
For
sure.
He's a duelist, and I used to do a lot of fencing, so that I'm kind of comfortable with that too. So I put a lot of myself into it, but I did that because I was coming back to role-playing games. I've been away for a long time from role-playing games, and I wanted something easier to play, something I could connect to much more easily. But if I was, you know, now that I've been playing him for a few months, if I was doing another character, I would want to do something very different. I would want something to do something that is not me, or something that would be a character that when I was a kid, you know, I was dreaming about. You know, you want to be a wizard of fire, or you want to be a knight, or you want to be, you know, no one wants to be a rat catcher when you are.
What?
But yeah, something like that.
So what about personality-wise? I mean, so I totally get what you're saying, that, you know, you have the nationality similarities, and you have some of your past interest similarities. So that creates the location, the race, and the career. But what about how the character acts in scenarios, or how he, what personality traits he has?
That's not my personality. I have him being a very how do you say in English, womanized kind of character, who is arrogant and who enjoy a lot of food. I do enjoy food, but the two other things is not really me. So no, that I'm going away from.
Okay, so it sounds like he's very like pompous and womanizer. Excellent.
Exactly.
So basically, every Bretonian.
He's not very successful to it.
Sure. He's not very successful.
At which part, the food eating or the womanizing?
The womanizing part. My GM is not cooperating with that.
You know what, Helga and him really.
Oh my gosh! Yes.
Helga's having a hard time with
Helga's
the men.
Just in the wrong group of kids is really what's going on. Helga has four fellowship and four, what's the other quality?
Willpower.
And she's even trained, I think, in one of the charm-related qualities. Mm-hmm. So, in theory, I should have so much luck getting people to like me and I should be able to get people to do what I want. And yet, constantly, I'm just, like, on the bottom of the rung. I don't know. Nothing happens for me.
I have to say, some of it's dice rolls. In other words, is choosing probably the hardest attempts possible when you try. It's like, I want to convince a dwarf to shave off his beard. It's like, you know, it's just not going to happen. I'm sorry.
I do have some bad dice rolls. It's true.
I want to talk to the goblin. he did just want to kill you.
Hail, a festering hag.
So, Jordan, oh, go ahead.
You were able to charm a Conrad, at least in when you
guys, did get Conrad in bed, that is true.
That's right, but that's because he already wanted to be in bed with Helga.
I think he was resisting pretty hard.
Well, I don't...
You had to roll a die to get him in bed, I think.
Did I?
I can't remember now. You'd warmed him up over the entire, like, three episodes.
I mean, I wouldn't... I'm just trying to socialize him. He's a very, like, to-himself sort of dude. I'm introducing sunlight. I'm introducing social interaction. It's a whole new world.
Excellent. Jordan, tell us about a character that you've recently done that that you think incorporates some of these concepts.
Okay. I tend to be... Yeah, I wouldn't say that I'm like in the method actor type of camp, but I'm definitely a kind of player that will play just about anything. And in fact, that's one of the reasons why I'm so crazy for the Warhammer random character creation,
is because I genuinely like the surprise of not knowing what I'm going to get myself into and then just kind of taking it from there. So, you know, I don't mind rolling up a rat catcher or a chimney sweep that, you know, has a gimpy leg and, you know, is missing three teeth or something like that. Because I just kind of take that as a challenge, and then I try to come up with, you know, why the heck is this guy out adventuring? You know, what is he doing, and why? What would drive him to do that?
It sounds like you approach it. You like the random element, and then finding a way to make that work. Do you think that's a result of having some experience with role playing and playing the games to the point where you've kind of satisfied your early urges to play a certain type of character, and now you're kind of up for anything?
I certainly think there could be some of that at play.
Because I kind of am starting to feel the same way, and that's kind of what I've come up with. But I'm wondering if you. It sounds like you're in a similar boat, but I don't know if that's intentional or not.
Well, and it could just be, you know, there's varieties of spice of life, right? So it could also be that's something that sits very near, very central to my experience playing Warhammer specifically, because, you know, maybe in other role-playing games, you know, there might be, if I was playing a Western or something, you know, I might be driven to want to play, you know, a very Clint Eastwood kind of man with no name type of dude who's chomping on a cigar with, you know, and staring everybody down. You know, you might have a particular character type that appeals to you just on concept, and usually, I suppose that's why I don't mind random character creation so much, is because where a lot of people, when they think about a character, when they conceptualize a character, they start from, I guess, they start like with a whole lot of detail, you know, right? People who come to the game with like 10 pages of character background for their PC,
mm-hmm.
you know, they know where their character was born, and they know like exactly, you know, what happened to them at age 10, and then, you know, how they got into their profession or whatever. You know, they have a long list of enemies and, you know, all this kind of thing. Where I tend to approach it, and I don't know if this is just a facet of some play experience, but I'm very much try to stay open to the campaign influencing my character, because you never really know. I mean, you might build a character and you might create 10 pages of background, and then you actually get into a campaign and you find out that the campaign's really not focusing on the kind of things that you spent 10 pages writing about. And I create kind of like, you know, a basic concept. Like if I was playing, you know, if I was playing a dirty gunslinger in a Western game, then I kind of start with just, okay, he's a dirty, grizzled, you know, cynical old gunslinger. And that's all that I take from it at first. And then I start to kind of build pieces onto the character as the game goes, you know, as he has to kind of respond to different, you know, situations, as he has to interact with different NPCs. Then I go through a series of questions in my head. I say, okay, well, now I'm in this scenario. How would my character react to this scenario? And if he reacts that way, does that, you know, what does that speak about, you know, his history? He doesn't like this kind of character. Does that mean that he had a bad experience with these kind of characters, you know, in the past? So I build retroactively.
I'm really glad you brought that up and explained that in detail, because I kind of feel that's how I have played my last few characters, where I did a very shallow backstory and built it in as I played, and I didn't really know how to explain it or how I came about doing it. And I think you just hit the nail on the head on you're just building it retroactively as you go. You have just enough to start with, and then you meet some race and you're like, nah, I don't like them. Okay, well, I've always not liked them, and
yeah,
and this is why.
Yeah,
you know,
you can create these like these what do you call them, like flashbacks for your character well, that's why.
Yeah,
that's why my character behaves this way, because secretly, you know.
Well, it's really important to vocalize your character's history to the other players periodically, and not just keep it in your hidden little book, because otherwise, you know, nobody but the GM will really ever have an opportunity to understand who you are and why you do some of the things you do.
Right.
you know, like Layla, you and I have experienced that with in Michael Wilson's game with some of the other characters, and even on some of our own games where we really don't know some of the back history of other characters because very few people have really kind of let it out.
Yeah.
And that's kind of for that reason. For that reason, like you're saying, I do think that's a very good thing, and it's a missed opportunity that a lot of people just maybe because that's not the way, you know, the quote-unquote stereotype of gaming goes, that everybody kind of builds their character separately and writes up their background, and they kind of keep it, you know, on a sheet of paper underneath their character sheet, and they never talk about it. That's one of the reasons why I like to, whenever I'm, you know, running a campaign, when I'm putting a campaign together, it happens sometimes, you know, just invariably, just based on how you're trying to put your players together, how you're trying to put your group together. Sometimes players will end up creating their characters on their own, but I really, like, I dedicate the entire first session, basically, to getting all the players together and having them all make their characters on the same day, like all in front of each other, so that everybody knows, you know, what their thought processes are about the kind of character that they decide to play, you know, about their histories, and then that I also want characters to like be linked intrinsically with each other, so, you know, this character has a history with this character so that they have an excuse to be traveling together instead of just, you know, you meet in a bar and a guy comes by and he hires you for a job.
I like that.
So, like, getting picked up in a bar and getting hired for a job?
No, I like that. I like that when they create it together, they have more reason to stay together, because I feel like that forces them to kind of commit to a certain teamwork, which I feel like when you first start the game with, like, new batches of people, that teamwork element is very hard to establish.
Yeah, you had a hard time with that with Helga. Like, why am I even bothering helping these, like, dwarves?
Yeah. Well, yeah, and it creates richer role play between the player characters and between players themselves, because, you know, if you don't know anything about the other characters, then you don't have anything to talk to them about, right? Like, I don't know you. I know you carry a sword and you hit things. That's all I know about you.
Are you talking about Burden? I don't know anything about that character.
Yeah.
Outside of that, he's a dwarf and he rocks. He rocks the combat.
He has aspirations, you know, to be an engineer, apparently.
Yes.
But if the players know, you know, about the other characters, then they can kind of turn that into role-playing opportunities, you know, like they bring up, you know, they start conversations with each other about, you know, sharing their past or sharing their interests or, you know, stuff like that, and that always makes the game much more interesting, in my opinion.
So, Layla, tell us a little bit about you and Helga and where this has been and is going. And
it's kinda, like, I have a relationship with her.
I know. I'm sensing this, like, deep connection. I want to kind of hear more about
it's
how...
It's because I'm a girl, right? Because I have more feelings.
Yeah, I didn't want to say it, but thank you for saying it for me.
Actually, this topic came up for me a while ago because as I started playing Helga, it became very apparent to me that she carries every single quality that I don't like in myself. She's stubborn, she doesn't listen, she's just like, she says things without thinking, just like all these things that, to me, you know, I try to control within myself. So I find her an interesting character to play, because it kind of lets me just, like, I don't know, air all my awful character traits and have an excuse to do it.
So you're using it as an outlet to do the things that you otherwise have to repress?
Yeah, things that I control so that I'm not a horrible human being.
Yeah, you can be a horrible human being in a role-playing game and you don't have to deal with
totally,
the consequences,
right? But,
well, like Philip's a womanizer. I mean, and he's a glutton too.
And he's a glutton. It's okay to be a glutton.
Yeah. See, I love to play alcoholics, because you can just be like,
isn't the wizard in Michael Wilson's game, isn't he a perpetual gambler?
He is a gambler, yeah.
Yeah, every time we go into town, he has to gamble.
We know very little about that.
All I know is he gambles a lot.
He gambles a lot, and he's kind of moody.
I think he has a problem.
Yeah. But what I've noticed, too, though, is that then after I played Helga for a while, I created Ella, and she has a completely different background, and she's supposed to be very gentle and very just, like, kind and accepting of most things, except for I find... qualities creeping in from Helga into Ella, and so maybe I'm just not a very good character player, but I find it very hard to play a completely different character than the one I've already made.
That's interesting. Go ahead, Philip.
What I was going to ask her to Leila is that does she feel it's related to experience? Because I think it is. I think for beginning players, and I count myself as a beginning player, to be able to play a human, to be able to play something that you can relate to, make it much more easier to get into a group and to enjoy yourself.
Helga was certainly your first character. And
yeah.
The first time role-playing at all.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I agree with you. In fact, like, I think Helga was supposed to be a charlatan for a while, and I don't think I did anything with that, because I absolutely had no idea how to play that. So, I agree, it is. The more I can relate to the qualities, the easier it is for me to keep playing the character.
That brings up Philip's earlier point about, you know, fencing, or his character's a duelist, he has familiarity with fencing. He's a Bretonian, and he's from France. I do it myself too, where I always pick out a couple elements of something I'm very familiar with. Like, I'd have a really hard time effectively playing, a musician or a dancer or a politician or a noble. I wouldn't even know where to begin being that person. Mm-hmm. I tend to gravitate towards things that I have some kind of interest in, and I can keep it really varied and play lots of different stuff, but I need to root it somewhere in something that I have some knowledge in to feel like I can actually provide something worthwhile when I open my mouth.
Right. Right. Yeah, there's an old writer's adage that goes, you write best that which you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's just kind of saying, you know, if you don't know anything about medicine, you shouldn't try and write a novel that's all about, you know, this surgeon or something like that. Because when you try and explain surgery, you're going to do a horrible job because you don't know what you're talking about, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think the same thing can kind of apply. That's the reason why you always hear about, elves are just pointy-eared humans, because most people who play elves don't have any idea how to play an elf. They just look at it for the high dexterity or whatever.
Well, go ahead, Philip.
Especially in Warhammer, it's tough to play an elf a wood elf in Warhammer.
Mm-hmm. I can definitely see that.
I have a player whose character is a high elf, and he's actually doing a really good job with it.
So we were reading through the dwarf book, the whole cultural part of the Blackfyre Pass dwarf book, and reading through dwarf history and, you know, all the fun stuff that goes along with that, trying to put a little meat on the bones of our Harrower of Thanes game. And could you play a dwarf character now?
I think so, yeah.
I think you could now. I think that, because that there were a lot of moments where, like, oh, okay, well, that makes sense, and we should have the other dwarves be doing this. And
a rare female dwarf.
The rare female dwarf.
I would be hefty.
And would you have a beard?
Of course I would have a beard.
Aw, Warhammer dwarf women don't have beards.
Sure they do.
They just trim them.
Did you guys know that male dwarves, when they marry female dwarves, have to get their beard to wrap around the female dwarf, a couple of times, I think?
The beard has to be able to wrap around the circumference of the dwarf in order to qualify for marriage.
Yes, that is correct.
And of course, the family of the female will fatten her up ahead of time, because the dowry to be paid is based on how much she weighs on the marrying scale.
So the heavier, the better.
Yeah,
it's like selling a cow.
It is a lot like selling a cow. that book, by the way, if anybody hasn't read, some of the dwarven culture is filled with some of the core Warhammer humor. In very subtle ways, there's a ton of it in there. But that whole, after reading that brought up the concept of, well, what about high elves and what about wood elves? What are they like? How do you play them? Like, I do not feel comfortable playing an elf, because I have a hard time, I'm familiar with them, I just have a hard time figuring out how to actually be one or act like one.
Uh-huh.
I have
the one player in my campaign who's a high elf. Now, he's kind of a black sheep, so he's definitely I mean, he was definitely raised as a high elf, but he's kind of sits on the outside, or he's not really that welcome into elf society, but he actually has done some really interesting things with it, you know, because there is so little that's really known about kind of the day-to-day, you know, lives of elves and kind of the general, like, the daily personalities, the daily interactions that elves have with each other. And so he's taken some good, leeway with it. And what we've kind of established for our games anyway is that the High Elves are, of course, they're all about basically propriety and everything has a process. And it has a very, you know, this etiquette, like everything has very, very explicit etiquette. And so when you address somebody, you know, there's a very explicit, very lengthy process for, you know, being introduced. And then there's a very lengthy process for preparing for a meal. And then there's a very lengthy process for thanking the host for that meal.
I could see some humor in that. If you could get it down to where you felt comfortable performing all those things, like in remembering when to do them. That could add some fun humor into a game.
And of course, we kind of you know, gloss over the specifics of it. It's not so much important that we remember, like, the actual etiquette, but it's more of a, you know, we had one scene in the campaign where the elf character, he was back in the town where his uncle is a tax collector, and so, of course, he actually is at odds with his uncle, but he had to do the proper elf thing when he's in town. He has to go let his uncle know that he's in town, and his uncle, of course, having to do the proper thing, has to invite him over to his home to come, you know, stay for tea and dinner and all that. And so, of course, he's traveling with a human and two dwarves, and the uncle had, you know, there were some really interesting exchanges where the uncle, you know, greets his estranged nephew, and then he sees him in the presence of two dwarfs, and of course he's obligated as the host to invite them both in, and so they're at this very lengthy dinner. It's like I think it was literally 3 hours that it took for them to get through the whole ceremony of dinner.
Wow.
And the elves were having to tolerate the dwarfs' presence, and the dwarfs were having to tolerate the elves' presence the whole time, and it was just, yeah, it was funny.
I could totally see a bunch of stubborn dwarves sitting there hating all of the etiquette and everything that goes along with it, and why can't I start eating yet? There's, like, this big meal in front of them.
Yeah, like, I think that was exactly it. There's, like, the dwarf kept reaching for his to fill his plate, and the elf PC kept looking over at him and shaking his head no.
Not yet. So have any of you guys ever played a character that was of the opposite sex?
I played one long, long time ago, but I don't have any particular qualms against playing, you know, cross-gender characters. I figure, you know, you play the character the way that they should be played.
Yeah, and you need to be careful though. I played as well a female character in D&D, sometimes what get me is when people play a female character and really go playing it as a cliche, you know, almost like the femme fatale type character, which can be fun, but when it's every female character is a femme fatale, can get a little tiring.
And it can be problematic if the person playing a cross-gender character isn't trying to be responsible with it. I had a very bad experience where, you know, one of the players was playing a female character, and I think I was playing an elf and his character was an elf, and we were the only elves in the party. So, of course, that obligates his character to hit on my character at every opportunity.
I find when role-playing and the two guys are hitting on each other through their characters to be one of the funniest moments. And it's so like you think it's supposed to happen, but it's so awkward, and it's just this very, very strange occurrence that just tends to happen all too often.
Yeah. Yeah, and so when the GM at one point called for me to make, I think it was either like a, well, this was D&D, so I think it was like a wisdom check or something like that to avoid, to fend off his advances, and of course I failed. In fact, I think I rolled like a 1 or something like that, so my character was supposedly totally smitten with his character, and I was
the episode of Community with the Dungeons & Dragons episode, like episode 10 of season 2, I think it was, because I downloaded it one time, is they do a bunch of role-playing in that, and that is some of the funniest role-playing ever done on a TV show. And one scene in particular, two characters go through this whole, like, super sexy scene, and it is hysterical. I mean, like, rolling on the floor laughing, hysterical. That whole episode is gold. So if you haven't seen it and you enjoy role-playing, do yourself a favor and find it.
So did your elves end up together?
I think I basically threw up my arms in protest at that point.
Throw herself lustily at you?
Well, the problem was she was seducing
me. She likes
so,
a fighter, so, you
so,
know.
So apparently my character threw himself at her.
Good.
Good for you. Well, before we kind of wrap up this segment, I want to kind of go through a couple of the comments from the community and see if this sparks any other conversation. Troy Chrisman had commented that he always tries not to bring any of himself into his characters. He thinks it's the heart of role-playing. Let's see, he says that Thane, the character he's playing, is a real dour character, really no fun at all. He says he's fun, so having somebody who's the opposite really is something that he gets into and has a lot of fun trying to play polar opposites of his personality. And I can totally get that concept. That's a lot of fun. Sometimes you might take that as, you know, like, well, am I like a really introverted person and I'm going to play somebody who's really out there? Or am I going to do something where, you know, I'm going to play somebody who's a total bummer because I'm an outgoing guy? I mean, you can really kind of, that can meet a lot of different personality types and be pretty interesting.
A good role-playing challenge, which in itself can be enjoyable, just to try and think outside of your normal, or you know, it's like they always say the villain that you love to hate, right? So you hate somebody, or you hate somebody, but you hate them so much that you kind of enjoy hating them. So you can do that with your own characters. Like, you can play a character who's totally despicable to you, to your own personal, you know, like, moral stance. But that kind of makes them fun because you're like, well, this character would act in a totally different manner than I would. And you get to see the results of those decisions.
Lo Walmo on Facebook, he said his best suggestion to role-playing a distinct character is to find out how your character speaks. Rhythm, dialect, choice of words, and all that make a huge impact and really are really helpful for other players to recognize when you are expressing yourself and your character. And that's actually a really good idea. I was considering doing that with my ogre character.
Has Lo Walmo read the Martin the Warrior series and the Redwall series? Because
I don't know.
That entire series is all about different dialects and all the characters speaking crazy accents and stuff. I don't know if you guys are familiar.
I'm familiar with it, and I remember what you're saying, not specifically, but conceptually. I remember there was a lot. Whenever they were talking, it was a little difficult to. I read it when I was pretty young, so I had a little bit of a hard time with it, but I do recall that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I actually really like his suggestion. It just happened to make me think of the whole Redwall series because the author of that series, very effectively uses different dialects and stuff like that to make the different characters pop.
Well, they certainly create that dialect difference or speaking in an accent or anything like that certainly creates memorable characters at the very least. I mean, Theodosius von Tüchtenhagen is embedded forever now in my memory because of his silly speech impediment.
Mm-hmm. How dare you?
I mean, it does, but I mean, the only memorable characters that I've ever met throughout my role-playing experiences have generally had something very dramatic out there that made them stand out and memorable. So, you know, they either looked, acted, or sounded different than everybody else. And I think you can bring that into your PCs, too.
Yeah.
especially dwarves. They're easy. They're like, you just go old school Scottish and grumpy, and you can be in character, no problem.
So what you're saying is that Helga should develop a Russian accent of some sort.
I think that's only natural. Let's see, what else do we have in here? I'd like to see if anybody actually does some of the same stuff. Here, Daniel Weiss commented on what I think is closest to what I seem to do, which is playing a character who are exaggerated shades of my personality, but are not usually like me as a whole. I seem to think that Conrad number one and number two have both kind of fall along that style. Maybe not their profession, but their personality has a lot of similarities with this, like, inquisitive, trying to break things down and explain them and come up with these cool complex thought process. I mean, that's kind of how I work, and but I try and also make it a little more nuanced than that.
Yeah, I know a player who we used to play a lot of the White Wolf games together, a lot of the World of Darkness Vampire and Werewolf and stuff. And of course, you know, that system had like personality traits as, you know, character traits, you know, as merits and flaws that you would take for your character. And I mention this because one of the flaws for a lot of the White Wolf games was paranoia, that, you know, your character was paranoid, that, you know, there's somebody out to get him, or, you know, something was always going to go wrong. And this particular player said he would never, ever, ever play a character that did not take the paranoia flaw, because he, as a person, is naturally paranoid. And so he, you know, he says, well, if I'm going to play my character as paranoid no matter what, so why not get the points for it? and he kind of didn't look at it so much as paranoia. He said, it's only paranoia if they're not really out to get you. But I'm pretty convinced that they are really out to get me, so it's called being practical.
Well, let's wrap up that segment, and before we break for this episode, I'd like to do one quick treat, I guess, or instead of doing a Q&A this episode, one of our listeners has submitted a really nice summary of how to handle gambling in games, and I'm going to take this opportunity to review that with you guys, and I'd love to get our feedback on how we've seen it handled, and then we'll wrap it up. So I've been racking my brain on how to pronounce his name since we started this episode, but if anybody wants to take an attempt at it.
Masie Yagashok?
That's about as good as I could have done, yeah. It sounds awesome. I mean, I really want to hear how it's properly pronounced, because it looks really neat. Where do we think that... Where's that name from, do you think? Masiej Zagas?
Google should have, like, a name translator.
Maybe it will go... You find that while I read.
Yeah, so, I couldn't even begin to guess.
So he's actually pretty active in the Warhammer community, and this question's a little bit old, but I thought it was an important one to hang on to. It actually was a question. He's asking how we handle gambling, and then he provides three options of how it could be handled, and then asks for some feedback. And before we begin, he comments that gambling is about luck, intellect, and sometimes cheating. So number one is the luck method. Each gambler rolls a certain number of the same type of dice, for example, 5 fortune dice. Whoever gets the higher score wins. So you could, you'd have to, of course, define which symbol is more important, boons or successes, and, you know, if the number of boons are equal, you know, maybe they count as successes. But the idea is that's a quick and easy way to resolve, you know, a game of cards or a game of dice using dice. But you could have multiple players participate in that pretty easily. And perhaps, you know, if some people are luckier than others, you know, maybe you could incorporate an extra fortune die or a misfortune die into that roll, and really it seems a pretty flexible and quick fire way to do it. Mm-hmm. But some gambling games are based on intellect.
So let's say poker is a gambling game, and winning a game of poker isn't 100% dependent on one's luck. But there is a level of skill involved in it. Each time a PC starts to gamble, the GM should let him make an intuition check against an opponent's intuition. Each success or boon rolled will be added to the luck check's outcome. If the case is failed, nothing happens. Challenges don't affect your luck. So you could also generate stress or even a negative condition card for your PCs. You can also have one misfortune die to the luck when you roll a bane on your results. So that's a way, if you wanted to get a little deeper and incorporate luck into an intellectual game, you can kind of add some layers to it. Mm-hmm. The reason I really wanted to bring this up is it got me thinking about our wizard character from Michael Wilson's game and how he handles gambling, and it's not that dissimilar from this. It's actually very similar to just the straight-up luck method. But the other fun thing you could do is add in things like cheating. And that works a lot like an intellect check, but instead of an intuition, you're using skullduggery. And it's more risky, too, because maybe if you generate a chaos star or two, your PC maybe gets revealed that they're cheating. Mm-hmm. So that's one way, or three ways, or a couple different levels of complexity that you can approach a gambling game. Do we have any other ways that we've seen it handled?
I just actually asked the same question about gambling on the Fantasy Flight board about, I think, 2 weeks ago, and I got some very nice ideas too from the community there. Some people were suggesting, so basically if you look at a bluff type card game like poker, you use like guile, given that you are trying to bluff the other player. Yeah, it's about intelligence as well, because you are building your pool of cards, but it's a lot about bluffing the other player and making them believe that you have a better hand that you may have. Using a very similar method as he's suggesting with intuition, but using guile instead.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you have a strategy type of card game like a blackjack, then yeah, it's totally an intuition type, intelligence type, against an opposed check decided by the GM. And then if you have a dice game, it could be skullduggery or it could be coordination.
Interesting.
But one of the response that I got is someone sent a link to a real dice game that exists that is called Trips, and I didn't know about it. Or it's also called a Game of Three, and can be played with a D6 die, and it actually is very. It kind of falls very well within playing RPG and playing dice game within RPG. So if anyone, now you can Google Game of Three and you can find the very simple rules, and you can use D6 or you can use Fortune Dice or you can use Expertise Dice with it.
Maybe we'll try and get a link to that in the show notes.
Yeah, okay.
Great. Well, I think that'll wrap it up for this episode of the Reckless Dice Podcast. We'll be back in 2 weeks with our next episode. If you enjoy the show, please show your support with a review on iTunes. Till next time, thanks for listening.